Ms. Vaughn versus Carlos Nissan of Tupelo. Mr. Wade.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Your Honor, this case involves an exception to the Mississippi Employment at Will Doctrine that we've now had in Mississippi for 2 decades. The exception is that an employee cannot be fired in Mississippi for reporting illegal activity. My client is Sandy Vaughn. She worked for a car dealership in Tupelo called Carlock Nissan. The Carlock family owns about 5 dealerships, and this is one of them. She worked for the Nissan dealership. Her job was to solicit car sales and deal with customers. And she testified that in that capacity, she had accumulated, she said, 118 customer complaints about various misdeeds of the car dealers. And she says she talked to the defendant Hill. Mr. Hill was an operations manager for all of the 5 car dealerships. I think he was employed by a separate corporate entity, but he was basically over all of the dealerships. And she said she talked to him and told him that she had this stack of complaints and that the company was fixing to get sued. But according to her, he didn't do anything about it, didn't take any action about it. And during the first week of April of 2009, she called, and there's no dispute about this, she called the franchisor, the manufacturer, Nissan Motors USA, and they made records of her calls. She called anonymously and told them about probably 6 or 7 different types of fraudulent activity that she told them was going on. This was reports of customers. Counsel points out correctly that these are not things that she personally witnessed. She's simply reporting what the customers told her was going on. She did it anonymously. She said she was scared for her job and she was scared to tell them who she was. About 2 weeks after she made her reports, Your Honor, there's a summary of all these things on pages 519 and 521 of the record of describing exactly what she's telling. But anyway, about 2 weeks after she made her reports, the company fired a total of 7 salesmen, 6 salesmen and a sales manager. There's really no explanation in the record for why they fired them other than her reports. I mean, they never have admitted, well, that's the reason we fired them, but there's really no other explanation in the record for why they fired them. And then in June, about June 11th, she identified herself. She told them that she was Sandy Vaughn. She was a person that had been calling. And according to her, she told them, you didn't get all of them. And according to her, she named Mr. Hill. Now, they dispute that, and the corporate records don't support that. The corporate records show some other person's name being given, but that's what she said, that she named Mr. Hill. And Mr. Hill, on the same day, he says he was notified by Nissan USA. On the same day he was notified, he told her the company could no longer use her. She was fired. This case is a bit unusual because there's not any claim, not any significant claim. They fired her for work performance or anything like that. They started out saying there was a layoff, but they later retracted that and said at least one of the reasons we fired her is because you made these reports to Nissan.
Now, she reported it to Nissan. Is that right?
Yes.
That who she reported it to? Was there anybody else? Did she go to law enforcement or?
No. Of course, Your Honor, the McCorn case, as you know, makes very clear if you report to the employer or anyone else, and there's no contention that, well, you know, you should have gone to law enforcement. She just reported it to the franchisor.
No one ended up getting arrested or charged or indicted or convicted, or no criminal charges came out of all of this?
No, Your Honor, I might mention this. I've done this for a long time. Many years I've done this, and I've never yet had a case where that happened. Your Honor's had all the criminal background, and you know this. This is not the type of conduct.
Well, what do you mean I've had criminal background?
Your Honor, was...
my rap sheet is clean.
I didn't say Your Honor was a
no.
defendant. But I know Your Honor's got a lot of criminal background, and Your Honor knows this is not a... you were the district, assistant district attorney and the defense attorney and all that, but this is not the, at least in Mississippi, this is not the type of activity you normally see prosecuted by a local DA against a business down there, prominent business people in the county and elected DAs. It's not, that's not that type of conduct, but to me, it's clearly criminal under Mississippi law. I'd point out to your honors, one of the main things I say is, well, at least one of these claims is you're claiming future promises. In other words, we're going to clear your credit in the future. But there's the McGee case, Your Honor, from the Mississippi Court of Appeals, that there's a Mississippi statute that makes that even promises, fraudulent promises, to be criminal conduct. Your Honor.
Now, does there have to be criminal conduct, or is it that the person that reported it thought there was criminal conduct?
Well, Your Honor, that's I knew that, Your Honor, that question was coming up because there's the Wheeler case that Judge DeMoss wrote that to be compared with the DiCarlo case. And as I understand what Judge DeMoss said in that Wheeler case was that it's not enough that you have a good faith belief. There has to be actual criminal conduct. I believe that's what Judge DeMoss said in that case. But Judge DeMoss, Your Honor, you also on the panel in the DiCarlo case that Judge Dennis wrote the opinion where it talks about, in the Mississippi Supreme Court, I really refer you to what the Mississippi Supreme Court said when Your Honors remanded that case to the Mississippi Supreme Court. And they talk again and again about the plaintiff having reported his suspicions or his beliefs that criminal conduct was occurring, that fixtures were, when the company was paying the fixtures to a, this co-employee had an ownership in the fixture company, and the plaintiff reported that, I think he's selling us fixtures but not putting them in the store. And the court again and again from the Mississippi Supreme Court in the DiCarlo case talks about purported illegal activity, alleged illegal activity. So there is some tension, Your Honors, I think, between what Your Honor said in DiCarlo and what, in your opinion, Judge DeMoss said in Wheeler. I think there's some tension there, but I carefully read Your Honor's opinion, Judge DeMoss.
The tension is in the Mississippi Supreme Court.
Okay. But I carefully read Your Honor's opinion, and I believe that under Wheeler, I believe Wheeler is readily distinguished. Your Honor distinctly said in Wheeler, Your Honor, you said the parties agree there was no actual criminal conduct. And you also said the Gaming Commission has investigated and found there was no actual criminal conduct. That's in the Wheeler opinion. In this case, there's all they argue is they say it's not really criminal. They never dispute that these activities she says are going on. They never deny that, you know, that they occurred. We asked Mr. Hill that question, and he indicated he has no reason to disbelieve what she's saying about this conduct. And to me, they're not claiming that they weren't doing the things she's saying they were doing. That is, doubling the interest rate. They'd have a form, according to her, and they would double the interest rate or forge the amount of the interest rate. Or they would do like they were doing in the Laws case, from that Judge Davidson really had the original opinion about this. They would add things into the purchase contract they hadn't bought, like they would add gap insurance, or they would add various financial services to the cost. And so they just say, well, we don't think that's illegal under Mississippi law. They've never really disputed that these activities were going on. So, Your Honor, we believe that with a careful reading of the Wheeler case and the DiCarlo case, this is a case where she reported criminal activity. And to me, I don't see any dispute but what this is criminal in nature. And the fact that it's occurring, she's got like seven different types of conduct that she reports. It's not just like one isolated incident, what we're talking about in the Wheeler case, Your Honor. It's seven different instances. It's like a pattern of it, of seven different things. And then it's corroborated by the fact that as soon as she reports it, they fire all the salespeople. Your Honor, we pointed out in a 28-J letter, and I was embarrassed not to know this. I should have known this as long as I've done this kind of work. But the question of the type of conduct that's protected is a question of state law. That's not a federal question. That's a question of state law. What type of conduct is protected? And in the DiCarlo case, it's just repeatedly emphasized that this person is reporting what is purported criminal conduct. That is what appears to be criminal conduct. And unless they raised some question, if they came up and said, well, we really weren't doing this, then that issue might arise. But they've never said that. The best they came is they said, well, one of our salesmen may have been doing this, what's called the clean sweep program, as discussed in the briefs. We might have had one salesman doing that, but we weren't responsible for it. He was more of an independent contractor. But they've never really disputed that this was going on. Your Honor, this This case, to me, there are lots of these cases, but I don't know that I've ever seen one that would have more of a significant public interest, the public interest being served by what she did. You have the public interest, obviously, of the car competitors who are out trying to sell cars on an honest basis. You got Nissan, the corporate manufacturer, who wants their dealers to be, you know, they want to have a good reputation. They want their dealers to be honest. There's a general public interest in criminal activity not being carried on. So it's a huge public interest that's being disserved if Your Honor should rule that they could fire her for making these reports. And just as a practical matter, the tort is reporting illegal activity. There's no decision, at least no decision from Mississippi Supreme Court that's ever said you have to be the FBI or you have to be a district attorney and you have to have this by competent evidence to prove your case, but reporting, that it's the nature of the tort. It's almost like a confidential informant that they report what they perceive to be illegal activity. So we believe that this fully meets McGarn, and we believe the district judge gave, a close reading of Wheeler distinguishes from this case, Your Honor. It's more like DiCarlo. It's more like McGarn itself, where he reported that they're making me dilute the chemicals. It's more like those cases, or the Drake case from this circuit. And obviously this is a question of Mississippi law determined by the Mississippi Supreme Court. And I just cannot imagine, Your Honor, in light of McGarn and that line of cases, that the Mississippi Supreme Court would say that an employee could be fired for doing what Ms. Vaughn did in this case. Your Honor, I have just a couple.
What do we have here that I guess you reported that showed fraudulent intent, a criminal intent? I mean, seven people were fired. There was some sloppy paperwork going on. Documents were changed. Things of that nature, but where do we draw the line between just sloppy business work or actual criminal intent to defraud, theft, larsceny, whatever?
Your Honor, we believe that would be a classical jury issue. That's always the issue in all the criminal cases. I mean, not all. Lots of criminal cases, that's the issue. Was there a criminal intent? Did this go beyond? Well, I mean, I don't think the court should just accept what counsel says in their brief, or what the court said in her opinion, maybe this was just negligence or oversight. You know, when you have so many different types of activity, and some of it, to me, I mean, you can't make a mistake in going out and doubling the interest rate or adding something in a financial document that's not there. Of course, you ought to remember, we're dealing with a lot of these people that are financing these Nissan Altima cars, for example, low income, not very sophisticated type of people. And to have somebody like Ms. Vaughn there to report what's going on is about the only way they're going to get any redress. And it's just, I mean, that's what the juries decide all the time. Was there, under the Wheeler case, they may be entitled to an instruction that she has to prove there was actual criminal activity going on. They very well may be entitled to that instruction, but that's a jury issue to determine, do we have that many mistakes and that many errors that's going on? And to me, defense counsel's never really, all they've really said is, well, you can't prove it. You're not, you know, you haven't met the burden of proof that a district attorney would have to meet. That, to me, that's all they've really said. Or what she's saying is hearsay. She's reporting what customers have told her, but in the form of written complaints. And we just believe it's been too onerous a burden put on her.
Outside of her statements that she thought some criminal activity was going on, was there anything independent of her declaration that she brought forward? You said she talked to customers. Did she bring in the names of customers or statements from customers, or did customers accompany her? Was there anything independent from her other than her declaration that she thought there was some criminal activity going on?
Your Honor, in her affidavit, she names some of the customers that were involved as best she could remember about the customers who were involved. But no, sir, we failed to take the depositions of these customers, some of them that she said were the victims, but to me that's just as available to them as it is to us. But she names, in her affidavit, she names the particular customers on some of the transactions as to what happened with that particular customer. And her affidavit that she named those customers is in the record. And then in some of their own financial documents, they list transaction numbers and stuff, you know, a particular sale. So she was being as specific as she could. Now, if they'd come in and said, you know, this never happened, we never did these activities, then that would be a different area. But nobody's ever denied that. Mr. Hill basically indicated he didn't have any reason to dispute what she's saying is right. He just said, I didn't know exactly what she was alleging. Mr. Hill says, I just knew she'd call the company, the franchisor, and that was good enough for me. You're fired. We believe that also violates the my time's up, John.
Oh, you have some time.
It violates a malicious interference under state law against Mr. Hill. Okay. Thank you, John.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Morgan.
May it please the court, Rochelle Morgan on behalf of Carlock Nissan and Corbett Hill. Your Honor, Mr. Wade has articulated that this is a case concerning the McCarn exception to the Mississippi Employment at Will Doctrine, and that is true. Plaintiff was an employee of Carlock Nissan. She made complaints to Nissan USA, which, as Mr. Wade pointed out, is the franchisor for the local Nissan dealership. Those complaints, however, when you review the wording of the complaint, both in her testimony and her deposition, as well as in the Nissan USA records, do not reveal any criminal activity. Under McCarn, as well as under this court's and the Mississippi court's examination of similar claims, the plaintiff in an employment dispute such as this is required to come forward and provide some competent evidence of each element of the crime which they allege they reported, which resulted in their termination. Ms. Vaughn has not done that. As the court is aware from the briefing, the only evidence in the record related to any type of activity is Ms. Vaughn's own testimony. She provided no affidavits from any customers concerning any alleged forged documents. She identified no forged documents. She identified no documents where customers alleged their purchases were changed to include gap insurance or other things. There is simply no evidence before this court other than inadmissible hearsay related to Ms. Vaughn's allegations. And under this court's prior rulings in Kyle and Wheeler, that is not sufficient. And additionally, under the Mississippi court in Hammonds, that is not sufficient to state a claim for wrongful termination under the McCarn exception.
Did she use words like fraud, theft, and larceny?
Not in the Nissan USA complaints, no, sir. She did say, there is one instance, and Your Honor has this in the record, where she says there was stealing from customers. But again, there is no identification of who stole from customers, what was allegedly stolen. There is no indication in her testimony related to those points about that information. It's just some customer said something got stolen. There's absolutely no evidence of any actual theft that occurred. The same with the other points. She alleges that the financing documents were forged, but she has not provided any document that was actually forged. She has not identified any person who actually forged a document or any customer who actually complained of a forged document. There is no affidavit from those customers. To the extent Ms. Vaughn provided an affidavit of herself for the summary judgment response, she could have just as easily gone out and located her witnesses and asked them to provide an affidavit. That might have constituted competent evidence.
Was she in a position at the company where she had privy to this information, to the documents, to all these things that she was alleging? Did her job at the company involve her handling these incidences and situations where she would have familiarity with this?
No, Your Honor. The answer is no. She was hired as a telemarketer. Her job was strictly to follow up with sales calls, either with customers who came to the dealership who did not purchase vehicles, or with customers who were targeted by either the local car lock dealership or the franchisor as having the economic means or living in a specific area that might be a good candidate for a purchase. She would make telephone calls and follow up with emails of these folks. She testified in her deposition, and which is in the record, that she had no involvement in any of the sales transactions. She was not involved in any of the financing transactions, and she never saw the documents. So she is simply relating to the court her belief that something that was going on, of which she was not a party and of which someone complained, was illegal. And under McCarn itself, that is not sufficient. So the district court reviewed the evidence before it, reviewed the record, reviewed the Nissan complaints, and reviewed the testimony of the parties and determined, in fact, that she had not met each element of the crimes that she was alleging occurred, and that she did not have competent evidence on those points. I'd like to clarify, if I may, Mr. Hill, who is an individual defendant in this case, he was brought in on a claim of malicious interference. He also testified as the Carlock corporate representative, and he did, in fact, explain the terminations of those other employees at around the same time that we now know Ms. Vaughn complained. Of course, as Mr. Wade pointed out, when she began complaining to Nissan USA, she did it under an assumed name. She actually complained as a person called Sandra Betts. She called the customer hotline for Nissan USA and complained about things being done in her name, in the name of Sandra Betts, without giving her name or her position. And Mr. Hill or anyone else at Carlock Nissan was unaware of those complaints in April, as the record will show. But Mr. Hill testified at the record at page 1526, the reason for those prior terminations was in fact related to an economic downturn which had begun to occur in the automobile industry. They essentially replaced the general manager with a lesser paid manager and reduced their sales force significantly during that time.
So were any of those terminations, seven people that got fired, as a result of her making a report to Nissan?
Mr. Hill testified that that was not correct. Mr. Hill testified that the reason for those terminations was strictly economic. And the reason for that was because neither he nor anyone else at Carlock were aware of Ms. Vaughn's complaints at that point. Mr. Hill testified that the first time he became aware of Ms. Vaughn's complaints was in June when she was fired.
It was her job to call customers and after sales to see if they were happy or something like that?
Your Honor, that's a little muddy, honestly. I don't believe that there's testimony in the record that supports that she had a job where she would make follow-up calls after a sale transaction had occurred. Her job really was to get people back in the door, to facilitate the salesman talking to them again, to give them a second chance at trying to make a sale.
Is there a genuine dispute as to whether Mr. Hill acted in bad faith when he fired her?
We believe that there is not a dispute about that, Your Honor. We believe that the evidence does not show any malice by Mr. Hill, and we base that on several cases, Your Honor, where the courts have found, Mississippi and this circuit, have found that there must be something other than just the firing that occurs. For instance, in the Mississippi case of Gibson versus Estes, Gibson was fired as a result of investigating activities of the mayor that he believed were illegal. He had also, previous to that, investigated several of the mayor's brothers concerning illegal activity, and as a result of his investigation as a police officer, one of those brothers was actually incarcerated.
What did Mr. Hill say the reason for firing her was?
Mr. Hill testified that the basis for firing her had previously been determined, that they were going to eliminate her position due to the economic circumstances at the dealership. On the day she was actually fired, Mr. Hill was provided a report from Nissan USA where Sandy Vaughn had called in identifying herself as a customer. At that time, Mr. Hill said that was the last straw. She had gone outside of corporate policy, so he fired her.
And you said when they fired her, they were not aware of her complaints up the ladder?
Correct. On the day she was fired, but not prior to that, Your Honor. The testimony in the record is that before June, Ms. Vaughn had not identified herself to Nissan USA as Sandy Vaughn, an employee of Carlock Nissan. So there was nothing to corroborate or to correlate any activity of Sandy Vaughn until the day of her termination.
This was sort of a mixed motive firing, both economic and because the last straw she had done.
Your Honor, I wouldn't say it is mixed motive. Ms. Vaughn's position was being eliminated. That's in the record. Ms. Vaughn has not done anything to distinguish that or to bring forth any evidence that that was not the case. The timing may have been unfortunate, but it is what it is. And Mr. Hill testified that there was no need to have her position any further at the dealership. The general manager at that time was performing those duties, and the salesmen at that time were performing the duties that she would otherwise have been performing.
Okay.
Your Honor, back to the question related to the McCarran claim and the alleged activity against the customers. This is a situation where, similar to Hammond's, there's a series of commercial transactions. Mr. Wade suggested to the court that the people involved in these commercial transactions were not sophisticated. There's no evidence in the record of that. In fact, the only evidence in the record is devoid of anything related to the substance of the actual transactions. There's no contract, there's no paperwork, there is no sales agreement that Ms. Vaughn has come forward and said, look, Your Honor, someone crossed out 5% and put 6%. That would be evidence of forgery. Having some testimony by a customer suggesting that they agreed to a 5% interest rate and it was changed to 6% and it was changed after they signed the papers, in fact, might present some evidence of forgery, but there is nothing before this court related to these points. It is strictly Ms. Vaughn's subjective belief that something she was not involved in constituted some criminal activity. The Hammonds court said that's not sufficient. It's just not sufficient to say something is criminal. If that were the case, Your Honor, it would open the floodgates for employment claims in Mississippi, and it would also turn Rule 56 of our civil procedures on its head. There is a requirement for summary judgment that once the moving party has come forward with sufficient evidence to show that the non-moving party is missing an element of their claim that is material and necessary, that party must come forward with competent evidence, and Ms. Vaughn has failed to do that in this instance at each turn with each crime that she alleges was committed. Mr. Hill further testified with regard to the Clean Sweep program, which was a credit repair program that Ms. Vaughn claims was in force at Carlock, that he was unaware of any such program. That's in the record at 1531. Even if you take Ms. Vaughn's testimony as true, she still does not meet the evidence of the elements of the crime of false pretenses because there is no current promise. All promises are a future activity, which is not sufficient to meet the crime of false pretenses in Mississippi. In sum, Your Honors, in order to have a colorable claim against Mr. Hill, Ms. Vaughn would have to come forward with reporting of actually criminally illegal conduct. Other than that, any reason that Mr. Hill may have fired her, so long as it's not an illegal one, is sufficient under Mississippi law because we are an employment at will state. So Mr. Hill could have fired her that day for reporting conduct to Nissan, so long as that conduct was not illegal. And that's really the crux of the issue, is Ms. Vaughn's failure to come forward at summary judgment stage with any credible evidence of illegality concerning the conduct that she reported. The Nissan records are in the record, and Your Honors can review those. But Hill testified clearly that the same day she was terminated, that prior to that, he had not had any notice of the complaints that she had made. That's in the record at 1526. It's only when there is no justifiable cause for termination that the court can impute malice or infer malice, and that's in Morrison. Even in Morrison, the court did not find that there was malicious conduct when Morrison's supervisor, the chairman of the board, undertook activities to investigate Morrison, to audit his reports, and to report back to the university concerning his activities. The court said that Mr. Meredith, who was the chairman of the board, was acting within his right to do those things, to undertake those investigations concerning the activity reported, and that the conclusory allegations of Mr. Morrison were insufficient to surpass summary judgment. Ms. Vaughn and Mr. Hill testified that they did not have any contact day-to-day. Mr. Hill was a supervisor, as Mr. Wade pointed out, over several Carlock dealerships and was actually an employee of the Carlock Management Company rather than Carlock Nissan. There is no dispute that Mr. Hill, as having that position, had the authority to terminate Vaughn and to terminate her position for any reason that was not illegal. Ms. Vaughn cites the only basis for her claim that Mr. Hill acted in bad faith was the reporting of the illegal activity. But as has been pointed out in the briefing and in the record, there is simply no evidence that any of the activity actually reported by Ms. Vaughn was criminally illegal, which is required by
But we
Ms.
have
Vaughn.
To look at it in the light most favorable to her. She's the non-movement. I mean, and there were some comments by her that people were lying and changing paperwork and doing things improperly. Looking at it in the light most favorable to her, you don't think that might survive summary judgment?
No, Your Honor. Even if you review the evidence in the most favorable light to her, there is still no dispute that she does not bring forward competent evidence of each element of the crime, and that is what is required to withstand summary judgment at that stage. Her saying something was a crime is just not sufficient. She can't just say something happened and it's illegal. She must come forward with some type of evidence, even under the summary judgment standard, to show that what she complains of actually fits within every element of the criminal conduct that she complains of. That's the case, Your Honor, both in Mississippi and in the Federal Circuit. This court stated in the Reeves Brokerage versus Sunbelt Fruit case that the court is not required to accept the non-movement's conclusory allegations, speculation, and unsubstantiated assertions, which are either totally unsupported or supported by a mere scintilla of evidence. As stated before, Ms. Vaughn has, throughout this entire proceeding, been given chance after chance after chance in discovery, in her deposition, and later at the summary judgment stage to bring forward some evidence by someone of some wrongdoing that actually constituted a crime in order to satisfy her burden under McCarn. The Mississippi Supreme Court has made it clear that the McCarn exception is a narrow one. This court has affirmed that on multiple occasions. It is not intended to allow all persons who are terminated for reporting something to someone to have a cause of action. It is only intended to protect that public policy, that very narrow public policy, when someone's actually reporting criminal activity. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan. Mr. Wade.
I do think this, I think counsel just about hit the nail on the head. I think that is a question before the court, and I believe at all that under the Mississippi Supreme Court decisions and under this court's decision in Wheeler and under the DiCarlo decision, I think that all that she's got to show is that she reported what purported to be criminal activity. And I'd just really like to ask your honors to look on page 357 of the Mississippi Supreme Court's decision in DiCarlo, where they use that perceived illegal activity. She's not required to be the FBI and to have that impossible burden. Your honor, regarding counsel's statements that these salesmen were fired for economic reasons, when your honor reads the record, Hill started off saying that's why she was fired. She was just fired as part of the layoff. And then they told the Mississippi Employment Security Commission, this is in the record, that she was fired because she made reports to Nissan USA. That's right in there, writing their document. And then finally, in his deposition, he turned around and said, well, that was one of the reasons. In any event, that's all a question of fact as to why they fired her. And if he fired her she says that the reason he fired her is because she finally named him. You know, that she told Nissan that you didn't get them all, you should have gotten healed. I looked up this page that she referred, Your Honors, to 1526, and I don't see where that supports her argument that they it certainly doesn't conclusively show that they fired all those salesmen for economic reasons. I mean, that's a question of fact for the jury. If they just happened to decide they didn't need six salesmen at the same time she's reporting fraudulent criminal activity. Your Honor, I've done a lot of criminal work, especially when I was younger, and I'm telling you the things here would make a crime in a lot of cases that I've seen. Regarding this clean sweep program, when she said there's no evidence of it, well, their document talking about the clean sweep program is in the record. In fact, what she says in the brief is that salesman wasn't authorized to be doing that. And she described it as being a program where the customer had to pay them $400 or $500, and they said, we're going to clear your credit. And we're going to have your credit be clean, and in 4 months we're going to change the interest rate. And that's the way she described what it was, and they never described anything any different. And, of course, they had no way of clearing their credit. It was all a fraudulent thing. And in the brief, you know, now she's saying, well, you had no evidence of it. In her brief, she said, well, that was an unauthorized act by one of the salesmen. But, you know, the document's in there. And to say that, today she's saying, well, you didn't produce the documents. They fired her. She didn't have any notice. She was told to get out of her office on that one day, the same day Hill found out about it, he fired her. And that's a question for the jury. You know, if they'd come forward with some evidence and say, we deny doing this, we deny we have this clean sweep program, we deny any interest rates have been changed, and that would be an issue for the jury. But in the deposition, they don't ever attack the truthfulness of what she said. They just said it's not criminal. Your Honor, regarding whether it's criminal, I'd really like to refer Your Honors to the McGee case, which was actually written by Judge Southwick when he was on the Mississippi Court of Appeals. It's reported at 853 Southern 2nd, 125. And all this guy had done was he bought some small loads of furniture. He bought like two small loads and then ordered a huge load and didn't pay for it. And the Mississippi Supreme Court said under our very broad statute, our very broad Mississippi wire fraud statute, he could be convicted of making a promise to pay and not paying because he didn't intend to pay at the time. It's broader than the old false pretense statute, which all you have to prove is that you receive money based on a false promise. But we believe that this is well within the statute. In any event, Your Honor, if they're right about it and there's no fraudulent activity going on, there's no criminal activity going on, and she's just made all this up apparently, which is what she's saying, the jury find that and speedily rule for them. I mean, that's just a classical jury question about what's going on down there. It's not a question of fact. It's a jury question. And it's not a question of law. It's a jury question. And Your Honor sent the Drake case back under similar circumstances. So we believe this case is just replete with fact questions, Your Honor, and that the question of fraudulent intent should be submitted to a jury, and whether she was fired for reporting criminal activity should be submitted to a jury. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Wade.